All right. Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellison. Today on the podcast, I'm with Jake Newberg, who is co-founder of Revolution Prep. And on his website, he says, or it says that they started Revolution Prep in 2002 with a vision to transform education. So Jake, really quick, what was the vision? Like, why transform education? You know, you're in school, you're working for a tutoring company, you start Revolution Prep. What was the big vision and why transformation of education?
Yeah, education is such a major, you can describe it as a market, you can describe it as a force, but so many people go through and spend so much of their time getting an education, and it really forms us. And what we saw is that a lot of times as people were going through this education system, they would have experiences that were so inspiring and would send their life into amazing places. They would also have experiences that would make them feel they couldn't be successful or they couldn't be good at something. Quite often, those would happen around math. Math is really, really hard for almost everybody, even mathematicians, or around testing. And so what we really wanted to do is we want to start a company where we could address that and we can have people's experiences that might send them in a negative direction of thinking, oh, I'm not smart, I'm not a good student, I'm not good at math, I can't. And instead have that experience be, wow, I did something that was really, really hard. And at first I failed, but then I tried it and I worked at it and I figured it out. And that just has a game-changing influence on someone's psyche and their attitude about what they can do in their lives, both in school and then even beyond school. And we thought, no more powerful a thing we can do with a company than that.
So in that too, a number of years later, what, maybe about a decade in, you decided to go through another transformation and kind of ditch the old, you know, on the ground in the school model and method of test prep or tutoring, and you've gone completely online. What was that like, and what was that, what spawned that transformation, you know, in that innovation?
Yeah. So it was really in line and consistent with that original vision, where we talk about how we're realists and we're also idealists. And so we're idealists and we want to go after that vision that I was describing, but the reality of it was, what is it that parents and kids were willing to make a priority? The SATs and test prep, that was something they were really willing to spend time and money on. And so we started, and for the first 10 years, that's what we were doing. But then what we were seeing is that our tutors were working an average of 2.2 hours per week. And we had 2,000 tutors spread all over the country doing this as a little side gig. But we also had a tiny little group of tutors who were doing it online for international students. And for them, this was their full-time job. And it was different from the rest of the students in ways that you can imagine. When someone does something as a full-time job versus 2.2 hours per week, they're more committed to it. They have more experience, so they move up that learning curve so much faster. We know that they're going to be around, and so we could invest more in their training. And so what we were seeing is that the quality of the experience was so much higher for our customers. What we were also seeing is we could then work with any student anywhere in the world, and especially anywhere in the country, and we could offer more things. It's hard to offer a Latin tutor in every one of the 500 markets in the country that we were in. But if you have three amazing Latin tutors, boy, they can work with kids in all of these different markets. And so what we saw happen is we could work with more kids. The quality went through the roof, as measured by what's called Net Promoter Score. And so to say we have higher quality than we used to is such an understatement. We have much higher quality than we used to and that any other company does. So 5 years in, it was such a no-brainer, and it was the right decision, and our programs are so much stronger. But those 3 or 4 years of transitioning, it's easy for people to look at a Kodak and say, boy, they invented the digital camera. what a bunch of idiots that they didn't turn into the next thing. But it's really hard to pivot and change this business that you have that you think is a great business. What if you're early, right? Apple kind of invented the iPhone even before it was the iPhone. It was the Apple Newton, and they fell on their face. And for us, our revenue from the peak offline until the trough of online declined 75%. We almost went out of business. It was very painful. And so many mistakes that we made along the way. But now our business is so much stronger than it ever has been before.
So what was it like as a leader to kind of, you know, to commit through that trough and to say, you know what, we can get there, or we still believe in this? I mean, what were the feelings like, the emotions like, and then how did you just stick at it?
Yeah, that is such an insightful question, because the feelings is such a great way to ask it. Every feeling, every emotion you can imagine, right? So many of the bad ones, so many of the good ones, right? So much pride when you're seeing, wow, look at this. This really is working. Kids are liking this program. The parents are liking this program. We're working with kids all over the country, working with kids in, you know, rural areas and international countries, working with kids in kind of niche subject matter. And the quality is so much better, and the experience both for the customers and the tutors is so much better. But we were inventing this new business as we went, and we were making mistakes. We tried paying all of our tutors on salary instead of hourly. And we switched over to hourly, but they have to have a minimum in order to get benefits. We tried so many different ways of just doing that one thing of how we pay our tutors or how we schedule it, the different platforms. We tried everything. There isn't one major thing. There's like 1,000 little things that we had to figure out and get right. And that was painful. But I think the emotions, my co-founder and I, we didn't really ever doubt that it was the right thing in the long run and that the business would be better off. But we did wonder if we'd make it through to the other side of the tunnel, if you will, alive. A lot of our colleagues who were good people who we really loved and had great, you know, relationships with couldn't make the transition, or the company was in such a tight spot. We had to tighten the belt. It was really, really hard. You know, for anyone that says, oh, we're going to make this major pivot, and it takes twice as long as you think. It's twice or 10 times as hard as you think. It costs way more money. We had taken investment from a private equity investor a couple of years before, and we hadn't really been paying ourselves anything. So we were able to take some money off the table, and all of that money had to go right back into the company. And we personally guaranteed any loan that the company had, you know. And so we knew that, like, not only would we lose this company, but we'd personally guaranteed anything. The bank could come after us for our house. The bank could come after us for every penny we had. And that's really scary. I have a wife. I have 3 kids. So it was really hard, and it was really, really scary. So it wasn't easy. And there was times that my co-founder and I, of course, we're human and we're going through that emotional roller coaster, and there's disagreements and we're getting in arguments. It was probably the most stressful and emotionally trying couple of years of my life, hands down. Hmm.
So knowing that, kind of coming through it, you know, seeing the growth, what keeps you, you know, moving? Because I know you're always trying new things,
yeah,
right? You know, in the work that I get to do with your company, but you're trying new things, you're looking at new opportunities, new partnerships. Like, what keeps you going for, you know, the new stuff into the future now that you've gotten to a place of success and maybe, you know, just even, you know, a standard of quality where a lot of people would just stop?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a good question too. And I think there was two, I'd break that up into two things. One is what kept us going through the really, really hard times. And that was probably just pride. Maybe stubbornness, stupidity, right? In some ways, honestly, like naivete that we were almost done. We're almost around the corner. You know, you hear mountain climbers talk about, oh, I could make it because that's the peak and it's a false peak. You know, we had so many false peaks, and what kept us going is we thought we were close when we weren't really close, you know? So I would say that's probably the answer, is what kept us going was naivete and foolishness. Now I think what keeps us going is that we know we've done the really hard stuff. We know we're now the leader in this space, and it's not, hey, can we make this online tutoring work? It's, hey, can we make it that little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better? I also think it's knowing that one of the really cool things about business, and especially kind of innovative businesses, is if you just sit back and rest on your laurels, someone is going to come eat your lunch, right? When Sony was thinking about how do you make that better Walkman or better Discman, that's when Apple came up with the iPod. And similar with the cell phone market. And it'll happen to Apple at some point. And I think that's what keeps us going, is partly we're always looking at it and seeing how can we do a better job to meet the needs of our students? Because if we don't, somebody else will. And that's what really prompted us to make this change. If we don't start an online tutoring company with full-time tutors, somebody else will. And the quality is so much higher, we won't be able to compete. So we might as well be that company. I think the other big thing is we really listen to our school partners and to our students. If you look at our three biggest new programs that we've launched in the last 2 or 3 years, every one of them was answering pain that we were seeing and hearing from families that we work with. One is we were hearing from so many of the schools that, boy, by the time kids get to middle school and high school, we hear so many kids saying, you know what, I'm just not a math person. We need to address this in middle school. And if you look at all the data, it supports it, that you'll see kids all over the place. They love math in second grade, and by ninth grade, the percentage of kids that say they love math goes from 87 down to 37%. So we developed our Revolution Math program, and the kids that do that program, they get better at math, and that's great. Kumon's decently effective at getting kids to be better at it, but our program also gets them to love it more and to switch from saying, I'm not a math person, to I'm a math person. Or even the kids that like math, now they like it even more. We have a homework help program where we're hearing from families saying, look, my kid doesn't need a tutor in math or in any one subject, but you know what he needs every once in a while? He needs to be able to reach out and get help from somebody for just 5 minutes. Sometimes it's in chemistry, sometimes it's in math, sometimes it's in history. Well, we realized that by having an online platform, we could be that, you know, kind of pseudo on demand, kind of help desk, if you will, where you can get an expert. That's something. So, and then the last one is executive functioning and stress management. It's really from listening to the families that we work with in the schools being like, boy, this seems to be a big challenge families are having that isn't being addressed. And so for us, that's really cool to be like, oh, we have really smart people here on our curriculum team. We could create a curriculum to get young kids excited about math. We could create a program to be kind of on-demand homework help. We can create a program to get kids to be better at time management and better understanding how stress affects their body and how to lower that stress. So that's part of it, is it's, I think there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a problem in the world and knowing you can fix it, and then going and pulling together really talented people and seeing them fix it. That's really cool.
So let me ask and maybe close out with this question, because, you know, as you're responsive to these things and as the company has changed, like how do you lead in that sense where you're open to these responses? But then also, you know, leading in the sense, and I've heard you talk a little bit about it with the growth mindset. Hey, here's who we are as a company, and here's how we lead with that growth mindset. But then also, how do you lead, you know, in a world where, you know, people are all over the place? You know, you have people all over the country that I've met. How do you lead them and lead them well and take care of them and make them feel like they're a part of, you know, this bigger picture of the transformation, you know, that you've desired?
Yeah. It's something where it's never easy, and it's always something that we're working at getting better at. But I would say a couple things. One is we ask a lot of questions of our team because we want their feedback, we want their input, we want their ideas. Jack Welch, you know, had a saying of all brains in the game. You know, if people are afraid to push back and disagree, then we're all cheating ourselves out of a really valuable resource. So one is we ask a lot of questions and we collect a lot of feedback. And then we kind of synthesize a lot of people's ideas and know that people are giving those ideas, they come through their own filters and their own lenses and their own experiences that they had before they were at our company and even while they're at our company. And it's on us at kind of in that leadership seat to synthesize that and make some judgment calls. And then we have to be okay making judgment calls that we know any major decision we decide to take on, there's going to be people in the organization that are going to disagree with it. And what we ask is that they trust us and they know that we're going to be right a lot and we're going to be wrong a lot, but we all have to buy into it and give it our best. And if we're wrong, we have to realize that we're wrong and we have to not be afraid about pivoting and changing. And when we're right, we have to continue and double down and follow on that. And so I think those are some of the things, but you hit a great point, which is there's additional challenges when you have a workforce that's spread across the country and they're remote. And so we're always looking at ways from flying people in periodically to me traveling out into the field, out into the world. We do a lot on Zoom. We do a lot of leadership meetings via Zoom. Our instructional team will meet with tutors from all over the country in that video conference. So there's a lot of ways you can give people a voice and make it clear that they're being listened to, even if they're not in the same room. But we're always finding ways of being better at it.
Jake, I really appreciate this. Really appreciate your opportunity. And I'll make sure people are able to connect with your company, you know, through this. But I really am appreciative of your work and you know, partnership. So thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for having me on. And if people want to email me, they can email me at jake@revolutionprep. Happy to talk to any friend of yours as a friend of mine. And honored to be part of what you're doing and what Valley Christian's doing. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Jake.